Today on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, an award-winning guaranteed Irish company. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Today on RTE Radio 1, text 51551.
The government is seeking to fast-track large-scale infrastructure projects. Public Expenditure Minister Jack Chambers told a Cabinet subcommittee yesterday that he wants to reduce the delivery timelines by a year. Planning has been approved for a Lewis extension to Finglas as it joins Metrolink, along with a number of Bus Connect corridors, Dart Plus West and South West. But with the rocketing cost of materials and labour shortages, how will the state grapple with how to actually get these projects built? For more, I'm joined by Brian Caulfield from the School of Engineering at Trinity College Dublin. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
All these projects have planning permission. Not all of them have funding as of yet. But you're saying that this is all cart before the horse. You need to look at asking the question, who's going to build them?
Yeah, I think that's one of the key things that we need to start to look at now. It's fantastic that we have all of those projects that you just mentioned there that have planning permission here in Dublin, and equally with other projects around the country. It's who's going to deliver them. Where are we going to get the engineers, the construction workers, the planners? Metrolink alone will take about 8,000 people to work on it over the roughly maybe 7-8 years of construction. I don't see any action in that space where governments are actively going out trying to find people to do this work. And it's not only alone in transport. We need to do something similar in energy and water and in housing. So there will be a massive skills shortage.
What sort of numbers are we talking about here? I mean, you say 8,000 on Metrolink. I watched with interest a Bus Connects corridor and the amount of labour that went into its construction was, you know, well beyond what you would have estimated if you were just asked off the top of your head to think how many people it takes to build one of these things. What sort of numbers of workers are we looking at to get all of this up and running?
So they haven't published numbers for all of the projects, and that's, I suppose, one of the issues as well, is that there's perhaps not that integrated thinking yet to say, well, you know, the numbers of people that are required. But the first corridor, the one that you probably saw, was the one in Lucan. That's going to cost €300 million, and the extent in terms of the construction workers required on it is very similar to a light rail line, because it's doing pretty much the same thing as a light rail line will do, and we've got 12 of those to build before the start of the next decade. So again, that's another area that's going to be a massive pinch point in terms of getting the people to deliver the projects.
How many engineers are you turning out there in Trinity every year and all of our other third level education establishments? Do we have enough?
So with regards to civil engineers, civil engineering coming out of Trinity, say UCD as well, and TU Dublin, there's maybe just over 100 civil engineers coming out from each of those three universities in Dublin on an annual basis. Flashback, you know, maybe 15 years ago, there would have been maybe 100 coming out of Trinity alone. So we're not producing enough. It's not as if the spaces aren't there. It's for whatever reason that the discipline isn't as attractive as it is to the other disciplines that we offer.
I'd assume this sort of similar numbers are retiring every year as well, are they?
Yep, you would see that happening too. But the big issue I see in the discipline is mainly around the salaries that the students are being offered as they exit from the university. And the bigger, you know, the big multinationals, the ones that are in, say, computer engineering, the Facebooks and all those, can offer an awful lot more money. So that's more attractive to the graduates than it is to go into, say, something like civil engineering that is building metros and light rail. Even though I find them very exciting and fascinating, the salaries aren't matching.
And are we retaining them in the country, whatever about, on these kind of projects?
We do see that, yeah. I see, at least with our own cohort, the majority of them now are staying in Ireland. But some of them are going abroad, and a lot are still going to Australia. And one of the reasons that a group of students I was talking to recently were saying they wanted to go to Australia was because there were projects happening there. You know, they're building a metro in Sydney, they're building another metro in Melbourne, and they wanted to get, you know, first-hand experience of working on these mega projects. And as yet, we haven't broke ground, and we still don't have government approval yet for any of these projects.
How much do you think that wage demand is likely to increase the headline costs on these projects?
As far as I know, in terms of the cost-benefit analysis and the business cases that have been done, they've been factored in to see what the increases in labour costs would be likely to be. But I suspect that's just within the sector of transport, delivering transport projects. It hasn't factored in the number of engineers that we're going to need for offshore wind and offshore wind and changing the water network right around the city and housing. So I don't think they've been factored into it yet. So that will happen. The other thing as well is that every country in Europe, most countries in the world, have these climate targets to hit, and they all want to be delivering this type of infrastructure. So we're in a globally competitive market to be able to deliver what we're planning to do.
And it's not 25 years ago. We can't simply call Poland and say, send us your best, please. How attractive are we to foreign workers?
In terms of, I suppose that opens up a whole other debate, one that I'm not qualified to speak on, but looking at what happened with the market, the Metro League team went out to the market. They went to 8 different cities around the world to try and gather a consortia to bid for the Metro. And as far as I believe, that was quite successful. So those companies that are going to come will come with their labour force, you would imagine, and be able to deliver the projects. And I think there's at least 2 consortia already established that are looking to deliver the big mega project, which is Metrolink.
Okay, but that is interesting, is it? So are you saying, I wonder, where were these 8 different cities? Is there any way that we can build these projects without going outside the European Union for that labour?
Again, I'm not sure whether we'll be able to do that or not, but if you look at the countries that are delivering, say, for example, in Australia, an awful lot of the workers that are delivering their metro systems have come from Asia, so they've come from outside of Australia and into Asia to deliver those systems. And I suppose that's what, you know, we may need to end up casting our net further. But I suppose that will be up to the consortia that states that is given the task of delivering metro to deliver those workers. But then when those workers do come to Ireland, It's where are they going to live? How are we going to be able to sustain that number of people to deliver all the infrastructure we have? So I do really think it is the elephant in the room when we tap ourselves on the back and say, all these things got planning permission. For me now, the question is deliver it. Show me how you're going to deliver it.
What if we don't deliver this stuff, Brian? I mean, obviously the impact on our climate targets of not being able to decarbonize transport, it's pretty obvious. But what are the other kind of more hidden costs of not delivering this infrastructure, particularly to the capital city?
I suppose the main hidden costs are the cost of congestion. Like, we look back 20 years ago when Transport 21 was launched, and an awful lot of what we're talking about today was in Transport 21 and we didn't deliver it, is the cost of congestion. That's going to be one of the biggest ones. That's estimated to exceed €1.5 billion per year by the end of 2040. So that's a huge economic cost to the city. It impacts upon the vibrancy of the city. We've heard a number of, you know, the Cosman brothers recently talking about, you know, the lack of infrastructure. The American Chamber of Commerce here in Dublin have also said that the lack of this infrastructure could impact upon the growth of our city. So I do think that they're vital for the fabric of our city to be able to continue as it is. And the volume of work that's required is almost akin to Dublin looking to host an Olympics, given the amount of public transport, housing, water, etc. So there is maybe at least 2 decades of a very hard graft to get our city to a point at which it's future-proofed, without even mentioning climate, that we could cope with the populations that are coming down the line.
How is that figure of €1.5 billion of additional cost associated with congestion worked out?
The very simple way of looking at it is if a car trip should take you 20 minutes in free-flowing traffic and instead it's taking you, say, 40 minutes, it's that extra 20 minutes you spend in traffic. You multiply that by however many million of people travel or however many hundreds of thousands of people travel by car in Dublin on a daily basis. Then you multiply that by the number of days in a year and then the economic cost of time.
Okay.
And then you get your €1.5 billion.
So it's just lost productivity and we're losing €1.5 billion to traffic jams.
Exactly. But then there's also the opportunity cost of not doing it. So Metro is expected to exceed maybe €15 billion worth of benefits over 60 years. So by not doing it, we're forgoing those benefits as well. There's also there's a very long list, obviously, you know, air quality, there's noise impact, climate, as we mentioned, well-being, connectivity. The list goes on and on. So all of the benefits are there. And by not having this type of infrastructure, not just Metro, you know, even the 4-kilometre extension to Finglas, that's another impact. And then equally, I've said it before, that we're kind of in a dual crisis. The housing crisis will also benefit from this massive scale public transport, in that if we build dense housing near it, you know, we kind of kill two birds with one stone when it comes to congestion and sustainability.
Brian Caulfield, fascinating as always. Thank you very much. Brian Caulfield from the School of Engineering at Trinity College Dublin. Frilly-mouthed jellyfish and coming to a beach near you after this.
Today on RTE Radio 1.